Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I'll be interviewing Silky Herald. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. So where are you originally from?
So originally I'm from Germany, but I grew up in Japan due to my dad's work till I was 15. Then we went back to Germany, and now I've been in Australia since 2006.
Wow, interesting. So what were you slated to do when you graduated high school? Did you already know what you wanted to do?
Oh, I had no clue. And I think it's such a big ask of a teenager to ask them, so what would you like to do with the rest of your life? I really had no idea. So first I did a bank apprenticeship, and I think on day two I realized that that really wasn't me. My parents are very loyal people, and they have also been brought up in a way, once we start something, we finish it, we see it through to the end. So I did see it through to the end, and and then I decided, no, that wasn't me. And then I kind of did business and worked in the corporate world for many, many years. And I eventually found my true calling with becoming a hypnotherapist and a master practitioner of neurolinguistic programming. And now I've been doing that full time for 13 years as a full time practitioner.
You know, it's interesting that some kids know already what they want to do at a young age, and most people, most kids, don't really know what they want to do. And yeah, it's we have hints. We have, if we are aware, we have the, I guess, the different gifts that we have within us. We can use gifts for different things. So I can use a hammer to bang in a nail, and I can also use a hammer to destroy something.
Yeah.
So if we are cognizant and pay attention to the different gifts, it's a clue. Just like the fish, it constantly flaps, whether it's in water or out of water. So we have these clues that are going, but we may not know what we're going to use them for.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love those analogies. They're brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was there any defining moment that kind of led you, or how did the path develop with you going the route that you're in right now as a hypnotherapist and neurolinguistic?
So I think that I was always fascinated in how the mind works. And in my corporate life, I was working in the music industry. And I was completely fascinated how the same artist could go out and play in front of 100,000 people at a festival, but then would crumble inside and get the nerves and the shakes because of an interview with some personality. And I was just fascinated, how is it possible that that same person can go and perform to 100,000 people, but then they get really nervous about this small gig? And so I was really fascinated with that. And then I had one artist that I was working with, and regular thing to do for her was to either speak to her hypnotherapist and neurolinguistic programming practitioner, or to listen to a hypnosis audio. And that to me was the first time where I realized, okay, maybe there is something in this. And then I started to explore that, but just, you know, as a hobby, basically. And yeah, then after I moved to Australia, I met somebody just very, you know, randomly. And we started talking about, yeah, how the mind works and how subconscious processes work. And yeah, shortly after, I booked myself in for a session. Yeah, had an amazing shift. And I signed up to a course. And luckily, I think I signed up for a course with one of the best training organizations. That was just really, really lucky. And yeah, that has been my path since.
And what's the reception you got from your parents or friends when you went this route?
So my father is or was an engineer. So very different thinking. And of course, I had a secure job. I was in the corporate world. I had the career. I was, you know, in my parents' view, doing all the right things. And then to chuck it all in to become a hypnotherapist, I think that caused quite a lot of concern, put a little bit of strain on our relationship. But of course, I knew that they were just worried about me. They didn't know anything about it. And to them, I was just doing something completely irresponsible that will put my future in jeopardy. And so, yeah, but I think I just, my friends were, some of them really thought, oh, brilliant. And others were a little bit concerned and thought I'd lost the plot. But overall, I think time just told the tale, because now I run a very successful business and see people worldwide online and also still in person in my clinic on the Sunshine Coast. So, yeah, it kind of changed people's minds eventually.
And how did your relationship recover with your dad?
I think because of the work, and I mean through the courses, I also did a lot of work on myself through that. So I was always able to understand where he was coming from, that he was coming from a place of love and just wanting the best for his daughter. And I think because I always had that understanding that even though our relationship was strained there for a while, that I understood why that was. And so it wasn't really difficult to recover that, because I never went into an unresourceful state with it.
Mm-hmm. And why didn't you just quit? You know, you have your dad, you know, kind of question it to some degree, and other people. Why not quit?
I just knew this was the right thing to do. And because right from the start, as soon as I started working with clients and I saw the shift, I saw the relief after a session, just that person breathing so much easier, they coming in for their next session and they hold themselves differently. There's a spring in their step. I just knew that what I was doing was helping people at a really profound way. So yeah, that's why I knew what I was doing was working, and it was just going to be a matter of time before I managed to pay my bills on it too. And but it really was that sense of, I'm doing something useful here, I'm actually helping people, there's purpose in what I do. That kept me going every single day.
And what did you have to overcome? Because oftentimes when someone does something in the helping profession and you begin helping so many people, there has to be a deep root there that you have grown over time to withstand the winds of life. What did you have to overcome?
So I had major social anxiety. And I think that was because growing up in the environment that I did grow up in, I always felt like an outsider. Growing up in Japan, I went to a German school, but it was a very mixed international school. And as my sister and I, we lived in a complete Japanese neighborhood, but we never really blended in, because you can't, as a blonde kid, you kind of stand out. So we knew we didn't really belong there. But also, when we went back to Germany for a vacation, we were different there as well, because of course our cultural background as teenagers, the music that we were listening to, all that was very different. So, and I think from that, really, I had that sense of never really belonging, not being good enough, and all the other things that kind of drove that social anxiety, which I then carried with me into my adult life. And of course, then as a 20-something or as a teenager, of course, I started self-medicating, and that didn't really work in my favor either. So, yeah, and I kind of pulled through all of that, and in the end, really what helped was that I never allowed anxiety to stop me from doing anything, but also how I in the end really sorted it out was through the work that I did with hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic programming.
And neuro-linguistic programming, could you expound a little on that?
Yeah, so the short form is NLP. And NLP is very much based on, if one person has overcome a problem, if we copy exactly what they do, if we copy their belief systems, their values, their physiology, what they hold to be true about themselves, and so on and so forth, and we start to model that, we can achieve a similar result pretty quickly too. It's kind of like a recipe that you just follow step by step. It also is very much based on how the brain works, and we believe that no person is broken, nobody needs to be fixed, but that they might just be running outdated software programs. And so we help with updating that software.
And you mentioned earlier about the musician who could, you know, perform in front of tens of thousands of people. And then when they got off the stage, they were overcome with anxiety.
Yeah.
Why does that happen?
I think that is very individual for each person, why that happens for that particular person. Mm-hmm. But I think for some people it is that they are run such a perfectionistic model of the world and such a perfectionistic model of themselves, that they really then question every tiny bit. And it's almost like that all the things that they did really well, they blend into the background, and that one or two things that they may have not been perfect, that really stands out to them, so that their mind blows that out of proportion, and the memory of that might be very vivid and colorful, and all the good things, they kind of become diminished, and then they become really hung up about this one or these couple of things that didn't go so well.
Great. And you are a hypnotherapist and a grief specialist. That's very specialized. Yeah. So it lets me know there's a reason for you going in that direction. Did you have to overcome any grief, or how did that come about?
I think my path is actually a little bit unusual, that I started working with bereaved first, and then I had my own grief. So what happened was that a client came to me, and she wanted help with drinking so much alcohol. And she was pretty much drinking two bottles of wine every night. And I asked her since when that had been a problem. And she could pretty much tell me the exact date. And it was the day when her husband had passed away. And so I very quickly realized that we actually didn't have a grief problem, but that that we didn't have an alcohol problem, but that we had a grief problem. And so I started working with her. And I was really fascinated with how the subconscious processes work with grief, and that there are so many objections that it's almost like a part of the person doesn't really want to stop grieving because that would feel disloyal and they would feel like they're letting their loved one down. But on the other hand, they don't really want to be in that visceral, excruciating pain anymore. And so I've been working with the bereaved for about 8 years. And then my sister passed away from cancer. And she had had so many close calls. And we thought so many times that she would die, that when eventually she actually did die, it kind of came as a complete shock, even though, I mean, in hindsight, I think we all saw it coming. That really took my understanding of grief to a deeper level once again, because beforehand, I kind of heard my clients say it, oh, the pain is so visceral and it's literally like you're just on the floor and you can't get up. And once I was experiencing that, I had that real sense of, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was like that bad. And you know that saying that nobody understands grief until they sat in the front row at the funeral. I think it's very true. And then last year, my dad died really suddenly. And and then I lost my therapy dog last year as well. So meanwhile, I have got my own experiences with grief. And a lot of people, they start with their own grief journey first. I kind of became the grief therapist first and became really fascinated and went deep on understanding grief and subconscious processes. And then I had my own grief experiences.
You've definitely had some grief experiences, that's for sure. Sound pretty tough. And what role does the subconscious play with our grief?
So that I always say to people that a lot of grief advice is very rational, very logical. It's kind of like when somebody gives you well-meaning advice and on the outside you're going, no, that makes sense. Yeah, sure, I'll give that a try. Mm-hmm. And everything on the inside is screaming, hell no, I'm not going to do that. No way. That's the subconscious. And I've seen so many people with grief. They come in and they say, look, I feel like I'm going crazy because I know what I should be doing. I've been to grief counseling. I've seen this person, but I just can't do it. And say, great, so let's work with those subconscious processes. And I say to them, you know, this stuff where you think if I say that out loud, they're going to lock me away. That's exactly the stuff I need to hear. That's because those are your subconscious processes. And we can't really work against them because then it always is going to end up in a fight and it's just going to end up in willpower and that becomes really exhausting. But once we start working with those subconscious processes, things kind of start to change. I was working with a woman the other day. And what her thing was that she was very much beating herself up because she didn't hear the call from the hospital at night. And they had to put her husband into an induced coma before he passed away. And so she was beating herself up that she didn't get to the hospital before he went into the coma. And but she said, look, logically, I know that he actually wasn't lucid beforehand anymore. It wouldn't have made a difference. It really wouldn't have made a difference. But now, 3 years later, every single day, it keeps coming up. So what we did is we really just worked with that. And we found out that because the idea of the subconscious was, well, if I had gotten there in time, then I would feel more at peace. And I said, right, okay, so if there was a way that would work as well as or even better than that way in achieving that peace, that calm, would you be willing to give that a go? And so we worked with that. And in the end, it really turned out that, that battle that she had always on the inside, all of a sudden, because we didn't work against the subconscious processes, but with her subconscious, that really helped in her calming this internal dialogue, this constant tug of war within herself down. And from that, afterwards, she reported that for the first time, she was actually able to really cry and grieve and not instantly be distracted about the but what if you had gotten there earlier.
You know, that so many people are imprisoned by those thoughts of the things that has happened in their life, grief, trauma, and they're stuck there. They could be stuck there for a few months, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and simply in bondage because they don't know or have the tools to get out of it. And it's an internal shift, what needs to take place. And it sounds like you were able to help with that internal shift and not going with the flow, finding a way to go with the flow and not against it.
Yes. Yes, so true. It's so true. We got to go with that flow. And, you know, this poor woman was literally stuck in that moment, in that one short moment of time now for 3 years. Mm. And that is, to me, also what actually happened was because she was stuck in that one moment, she couldn't really remember all the wonderful times that she had with her husband. She couldn't access any of those memories because her mind always just kept going back to that one particular moment. And it was almost like it was robbing her of that rich experience of 40 years of marriage.
And just robbing her of all of the good times, the 40 years of marriage, like you said, and also the years that she could have been extracting some pleasure out of life, whether it would be doing her favorite thing she would like to do, everything just stopped. And the same thing happens when someone has been done wrong and they felt like they've been done wrong and they become angry and then they hold that anger inside and then they become hypnotized by hate. You know, and never really get out of it. I heard a rapper say that, hypnotized by hate. And we have the power, if we have the tools, working with someone like you to crack the code, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yes, I see so many times that people hold anger against when somebody has passed. Sometimes they're even angry. They have a really hard time admitting that. But sometimes they're even angry with the person who has died. Why did you leave me? Why didn't you stay longer? Or they're angry with the medical profession for not having been able to save them. There's so much. And it always stops them. And, it's that imprisonment, really. Yeah. Hypnotized by hate. I love that. That's such a great expression, Maurice.
Yeah, I heard that from a rapper. Having an interview, and he said he was talking about people. He had become successful, of course. He is successful, and talking about going back and dealing with people who have a negative mindset or a mindset that's much different from his now. And he said, if you stay there, they will either kill you, or you have to leave because it's just two opposite things, themes that are fighting. Just like we can, our conscious mind could be fighting with our subconscious mind, and we won't win.
Yeah, no, we never win.
We never win.
Which is why I always say we've got to work with the subconscious and not against it.
Yes, that's brilliant. I mean, that's absolutely brilliant to recognize that and then actually do it. And you are the inventor of Grief to Love Blueprint.
Yes.
How did you come about that, because of the work you've been doing all these years?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and eventually I also, it started very much by realizing, first of all, how subconscious processes work with grief. Then in my early days, also I had some clients, no matter what I did, it just wasn't really working. And then I kind of went deeper again and I realized it's not only what I do with my clients, but it also is the sequence in which I do it. So that I always have to go, what needs to happen first in order for this to happen, so that I stack the cards or the dominoes, so to speak, in my client's favor. And so I started working with that, and then I got that blueprint. And then when my sister passed away, I also realized that I needed help. And one of my closest friends is also a very skilled hypnotherapist and NLP practitioner. And I went to her for help. And she said, well, happy to help, but I really don't have the skill that you got with grief. Teach me. And so I had to teach her how to help me. And from that, then I started to develop a course that I now teach to experienced other therapists so that they can help their bereaved clients in a profound way.
Wow. And how can people get your grief to love?
So my website is just .grieftolove.com. And on there, I also have a roadmap. But one for clients, bereaved clients, that helps them navigate through the grief journey. And I'll get back to that in a minute. And I also have a roadmap there for practitioners on what they need to do to help their bereaved clients. And when I first spoke to a graphic designer for that grief roadmap for bereaved people, I said to her, look, what I actually need is I need about 5,783 squiggly lines that go from A to B to Z to X. And then I need lots of mazes and lots of dead end roads. And yeah, she thought, no, that won't look good. We can't do that. But there really is that messy, messy, messy grief journey that there is no linear path at all whatsoever. And I think also the traditional grief models, there are no five stages of grief. I mean, yes, there are five, and then there is about, 3,900 others. So, and things like overwhelm, anxiety, anguish, they're all not even part of the five stages of grief, even though those are usually the ones that people are faced with most and at first. That roadmap just kind of gives people an idea about what to expect, and that 3 minutes later or 10 seconds later, they could be completely somewhere different again.
It doesn't long. If it doesn't take long for something not good to happen to us, that means by the same token, it could not take long for something good for us. And that's the hope that we should have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our minds are so powerful. And I think really there's so many subconscious objections when we're working with grief, and we really got to work with those. That, you know, people often think like, either I'm grieving and I remember my loved one and I still feel close to them because I really feel connected to those last moments of their life, or I stop grieving and I lose the connection and I start forgetting them. But in actual fact, that is could not be any further from the truth, because when we grieve resourcefully, then yes, we do remember those last moments, and we remember everything else that we shared. Then we might be driving past somewhere and we see a tree or we see a sign or we see something, and it reminds us of this thing that we did 23 years ago that I hadn't thought about in ages. And then we have got those vivid, spontaneous memories, so that we actually, because the visceral pain isn't there so much anymore, so we get more of those natural memories that actually kind of give us a warm smile that might have more of a bittersweet tendency towards it instead of that brutal pain.
Yeah, have a more pleasurable experience.
Yeah.
And what are you working on anything right now?
So I'm always working on refining my courses and my processes. So I run, of course, I work with people one-on-one all over the world. I also have got a course, a Grief to Love course, that I launch a couple of times a year, because some people, they just really prefer the one-on-one work, and other people, they really prefer that community of working together and being able to exchange with other people in between the group sessions with me, because so many people don't understand. And even if it is people from the same family who've lost somebody, I saw it in my parents when my sister died, that my dad and my mum, they were grieving very differently and they were going through different things at different times. So that it really, they both needed to be able to connect to each other, but also to somebody else. So that's why I also have got the group option there for people who understand what grief is like, because so many other people don't get it until they've experienced it. And I'm running the next course for experienced therapists in October.
And are you on any social media more than the other?
I'm on Instagram and on Facebook.
What is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
You have to pay attention to the signals that your unconscious mind is sending you. And don't fight against them, but pay attention to those, lean into those. And that could be just the physical sensations that your body is giving you. It could be images that your mind is giving you. It could be stuff that you're saying to yourself. And yeah, explore that gut feeling. It's called a gut feeling for a reason. And maybe just lean into it and ask, hey, what do you want by giving me this sensation? What do you want by giving me this image? What's behind that? I would really encourage everyone to go deeper on themselves.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.